Buddy Green asking, how long, O Lord? It's 11 minutes after the hour. It is a Tuesday morning, and we're joined on the morning show by Dr. Don Clark, who is with Creation Moments, member of the board there. He's a biochemist, the only biochemist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio. And Don, good morning. How are things down there in Garden Valley, Texas?
Well, it's quite good. Mm-hmm. We are enjoying currently, I think, around 60-degree weather.
Oh my!
Sometime later today, it should start dropping.
No,
but
okay.
We have no snow on the ground,
mm-hmm.
And it's a little cloudy today. But yesterday and the day before were absolutely beautiful.
Aren't you feeling a little deprived, perhaps?
I mean, when I saw Steve Schultz's post on Facebook, I figured you guys had a lot of snow. So
Steve was with Creation Moments and based in Minnesota. Yeah, we kind of saw about 6 inches of snow, 5-6 inches where we are. And looks like David got a little bit more than that.
I'm further south and I got more.
Well, that's because you're in that warm, humid, tropical part of East
Dakota.
Yeah,
tropical part of East Dakota. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and we're about 20 degrees is how tropical we are today. So.
Oh yeah, it's gonna get up to 22.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. Well, I guess all the vines up there are now frozen.
Yeah, grapes
have gone dormant.
Grapes are suffering up here. Yes, they are.
All the vines and everything else.
And
ours are still very much green.
Really?
We mentioned grapes because Dr. Don is a vineyard owner and that would be a vineyard. And a vintner who would make wine. Did I get that right this week?
Pretty close. Vineyard is the grape grower. One who grows grapes and manages a vineyard, and a vintner. Is a winemaker.
Okay, well, he wears both titles, and I'm merely a sipper, which comes later in the process here, I think. Don, there's an article out it's about this thing called the Higgs boson, and I'm a little bit unsure. And I remember there's a big story last year about whatever it is, they found it. Apparently, it's a little subatomic particle that has been predicted mathematically, and folks over at the Large Hadron Collider have been looking for this thing called the Higgs boson. Tell us what that is and what's the significance of it.
Well, in order to describe it, we have to look at the standard model for elementary particles. Hmm. So it's all part of the theory of one of the theories for particle physics, and particles are most of us know about neutrons and protons and electrons. If you take chemistry, you at least learn that all the atoms that we have, that we know of, are made up of protons and neutrons, and there's an electron, or several electrons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the standard model actually breaks those particles down into smaller particles. For example, there's such things as called quarks, and such things called leptons, and then you have the bosons. So what are each of those categories?
What are neutrinos?
Neutrinos are leptons, and they are essentially chargeless particles like an electron.
Okay.
So an electron is a lepton, so it's an elementary particle, and the protons and neutrons, for example, are made up of quarks. There's an up quark and a down quark, and for example, a proton is made up of two up quarks and one down quark, and a neutron's made up of one up quark and one down quark. Two down quarks. So each of these particles, they have a certain mass, they have a charge, they have a spin, and by combining them together, you can get different types of particles.
Now, how do they detect something this small? Say, a little piece of an electron or a proton or a neutron. How do they even know it exists?
By smashing particles together. So, for example, in an accelerator, you typically take a charged particle, because you can accelerate it through magnetic field, and smash them together. So you would smash protons together, for example, and then see what particles spin out, and based on their spin and their energies, how far they go, whether they start off in a straight line or how curved they are, then they can figure out, oh, this is a particle of this charge and it has this mass, and so therefore it fits into this particular box on our theoretical, model for particle physics.
Now, are they detected by maybe an electron microscope or something, some other kind of tool?
Typically, I think by film or by probably now.
So they'll trace an image on film or digitally, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then seeing the paths of these particles kind of spin off and create, a white line, for example, if it was film.
In other words, you break something and see what happens.
Essentially.
Oh, I used to do that. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the the quarks and the leptons fall into a class called fermions, and then there's a separate class called bosons for example, the photon or light falls into. Mm-hmm. They give you an example of a boson. I hate to call it a particle. They call it a particle, but it is a transference of energy between one class of particles. For example, if you take the proton and the neutron and electron, you create an atom with it. Then the photon transfers energy from one atom to another atom and causes the electron either to, in generating a photon, the electron to drop from a higher energy state to a lower energy state. And that photon then can be absorbed by another atom and cause, that electron to jump to a higher electron.
Okay.
State.
So this Higgs boson then is something that facilitates the transference of particles or of energy.
Of energy of some sort.
Okay.
Now, the Higgs boson is kind of sitting out there by itself. It's not paired with anything per se. It is it supposedly transfers mass to particles. It's what gives particles mass is what they think. Or what they thought. When you get out into the bosons, it's like we are now out into highly speculative, physics.
Would you say it's theoretical, or are these actual things? I mean, are they?
The Higgs boson was totally theoretical. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is totally theoretical. Mm-hmm. And it's just a way of describing, the little particles that are spinning off from these collisions that they're seeing. And based on symmetry, they predicted that these other particles should exist. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them do exist, at least in a temporary, highly temporary mm-hmm. state. The Higgs boson... was theorized and saying, well, there must be something out there that's conveying mass to all of these particles. And so let's just call it Higgs boson, because Higgs was one of the fellows who theorized it.
But now they've nicknamed it the God particle, and I presume that's because of its function. Does it convert energy to mass?
It's supposed to, give the particles mass. And then, when you're working down at this level, it's really hard to try to describe some of these things. And, we'll get into maybe a little later in this conversation why that might be, because a lot of these things, some of them, like I said, they only exist for a very short period of time. And maybe by the function of colliding particles together, you're just generating them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise they wouldn't exist.
Suggesting that they don't happen in nature, that this is artificially created somehow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so you know, you're kind of smashing these particles together, and in that smashing, you are giving energy to these particles. And in the for example, let's just take the quarks. For example, we talked about the up and down quark, but there's charm and strange, and then there's top and bottom. Well, the charm and strange is the next generation up, which has higher energies than the up and down. The charm and strange don't last for very long, and then ones with even higher energy are called top and bottom, and those last even less time. But the stable ones are the up and down, which supposedly protons and neutrons are made out of.
So when you say that these particles last, that means they are and then they aren't, which means they've got to be converted to something, heat, light, some other form of energy, or into mass, perhaps. I mean, how does a particle just become non-existent?
Well, it would be transformed into something that is stable.
Okay, I got you.
So, example, if you created a top quark, for example, based on this chart, it would probably degrade down to an up, quark.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe going through it in a transition, into charm. And all of these things, for example, the up, the charm, and the top, they all have the same spin and they all have the same charge. What's different between them is their mass, which is kind of translated to how many electron volts does that mass have. So even that's put in an energy type of function. And I of course, from Einstein, we know that mass is equal to mc squared. So energy is equal to mc squared. That energy in mass can be talked about in the same light, if you will.
Okay, so the Higgs boson has been theoretically postulated. It's out there somewhere. We're going to go find it. About a year ago, there was a group of experimenters out there at the Large Hadron Collider said, oh, this is it. I think we found the Higgs boson, which was the God particle. Of course, it's that nickname that gets it all the attention. I'm not sure what kind of practical applications could ever come out of this. Is this just pure science? Is this just for the sake of knowledge you're doing this, or do they see applications for this knowledge?
Well, that is a very good question because the particle physicists, they come up with a theory and say, it looks like these particles should exist, either based on symmetry, like I said. It's nice to have, for example, the fermions. There's 12 of them, and they're broken down into two subcategories and another three subcategories. So, some of it is just we think that, matter should be symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
So they predict based on symmetry that these other particles should exist.
And that's an assumption, the symmetry assumption was developed out of our own observations of nature on a macro scale then. I mean, we say all.
We're obviously we're semical. I mean, mm-hmm. everything that you see in nature is pretty symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
It's semical. Whatever.
Symmetrical.
Anyway, symmetrical. Thank you.
It's easy for you to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So when you get down to, the Higgs boson was supposed to be this magic particle that imparts mass. But that's based on a theory that these are particles. Now, in the original discovery or the original news brief was actually 2 years ago. We did a program here 2 years ago talking about the Higgs boson, and of course now this article is saying, wait a minute, it may not be the Higgs boson. Yes, it has properties like the Higgs boson, but it may be another type of particle, which we could have a whole new class of particles that kind of behave like a Higgs boson, but maybe it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So, this field is rapidly changing. you know, based on some of these smashing of particles together to see what comes up, and then you try to figure out, okay, how is the world put together? Now, one of the things that disturbs me about all of this, and I'm saying disturbed, I'm not really upset, but, you know, is the lack of even, you know, taking the Word of God into consideration. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, we know from the first chapter of Genesis, and we know from the third verse in Genesis, something about how God created this world that we live in, and how He, you know, possibly created atoms and particles and subatomic particles. And what I'm referring to is basically what He said. He said, and this is you know, pretty literal. I mean, He said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And the second half of that verse is, "And then He separated the light from the darkness." And so if we take that one verse and look at it in terms of these you know, particle physics, what does that mean? Well, if that is a literal verse, then God had to speak into something. And perhaps that something is the space-time medium that He created first. So He hovers over this, His Spirit hovers over this this space-time medium, which for all practical purposes he calls waters, because it would have the property of like water, because, you know, you throw a pebble into water and it creates ripples. And we know that when we speak into a medium, it's called air, which is made up of, you know, various gases, nitrogen being the primary one. So if we are created in the image of God, and I'm summarizing chapter one of Genesis, you know, quite mm-hmm. dead here, but if we're created in the image of God, and He actually spoke into a medium that He first created called space-time, then what you have is not only light, but all particles that are that we see today, whether it be an electron, whether it be a proton, whether it be a neutron, or whatever those things are made from, it's all a disturbance in space. It's all vibrations in space, as opposed to an actual, you know, physical particle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like a golf ball that, you know, you throw at the wall, or you hit with your club. You know, that would be a particle. That's a big particle. But, mm-hmm. you know, when we think of particles, we're thinking a particle of sand or, you know, something solid. This world is all but solid. I mean, it is in that, you know, there have been, you know, theories that kind of suggest, well, maybe these things aren't particles at all, but just vibrations. And I think that would be a more satisfying explanation based on the Word of God than an actual particle.
So you're saying it would be a vibration at a specific frequency then? That would set it apart from all other vibrations.
Yeah. The frequency of the vibration would then determine how much energy that vibration would have. Which is not uncommon, because we at least understand light, that there are you know, that blue light, for example, is a higher vibrating mm-hmm. light than has a higher frequency than red light. Mm-hmm. And so we know that we know a lot of things, you know, about the visible light spectrum.
Well, there is a thing called the electromagnetic spectrum, and it's an amazing thing to contemplate, because at various points, as the energy increases, that is, the frequency increases from low to end. I mean, you go through sound to light and to X-rays and beyond to invisible energy sources. There are things happening all along that spectrum at all those various frequencies, only a few of which are we able to detect.
Right, with our eyes, but you know, of course, we've got other means of detecting some of these other particles, like gamma particles and gamma rays.
Well, we've developed ways to sense some of them, but there's still, I think, large portions of it, especially at the upper end, that we don't know how to read. We have no way to sense what's happening up there. I mean, it could be intelligence, for example, could be
right up there. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, how are these particles? Let's just take. The electron and the relationship between the electron and the photon. Well, you know, the photon is emitted as an electron drops from one energy state to another energy state, orbiting around the protons and the neutrons, right? And so it would make sense, and it's that. As you lose energy, that energy would be transmitted as a vibration, off of, you can almost imagine, at least I envision in my mind, for example, that, you know, electron just doesn't just jump from one shell to another shell, but, you know, that when it jumps, it would be vibrating back and forth, and then this could cause the vibration of space. Than to transmit or to emit a vibrating photon, so we see a vibrating photon, and then some of these other things, other bosons, for example, are just different energy states for the same type of phenomena. So instead of happening with an electron going from a higher energy state to a lower energy state, but what about a neutron or a photon and the spinning light within these particles, if you will, if they lose just like the electron, if they lose a drop down to a lower energy state, what type of particles would be emitted from that? Or what, you know, and so you've got gluons, you've got Z bosons and W bosons, and, you know, these are type of things that we can observe or have been observed, and it all may be the same thing, which just is a higher energy light particle, if you will, being emitted. Because of the excitation that, you've smashed these things together, for goodness sakes, and so you're pushing them into a higher energy state, and then because they're unstable, they start breaking apart, and out of that then comes some of these other particles. They call them particles, but again, if they're just vibrations in space, then I think all of this could be tied together quite nicely if you looked at that. The crazy thing about a photon, for example, we know that radio waves are continuous. For example, I mean, the radio waves are pretty long waves compared to light. Light has this property of being both a wave and a particle. Now, so it's also been described as a wave packet. So instead of just going on, continuously, for example, or a pebble thrown into water, creates these ripples that go on to the edge of the pond, for example, light is actually in these packets. So they don't go on forever. They're kind of encased, if you will, not in a shell or anything, but they're just packets of waves. So if you were going along, you'd see vibrations and then it would stop. You'd see vibrations and it would stop, and those would be the various photons. So it has a different property. And when you get down to, these levels, you're disturbing, the disturbances in space winds up being quantized because the space itself, the fabric of space, appears to be quantized. Everything is broken up into little pieces.
In other words, space is not a void.
Well, two things. One, space is just not a concept and it's not a void. But two, it's actually, there's something there, and there appears to actually be a fabric to space that is just like, you know, a piece of cloth, for example, is made up of threads sewn together and woven together. It appears that space is actually the same thing.
And that goes back to Einstein's thinking too, doesn't it? Because he's described us as being on the surface of a fabric. You know,
yes,
with bends and twists and bent back on itself. So, you, like, for example, if you traveled in one direction forever, you might wind up at the same spot you started.
Well, you might if our universe and our total space, our space-time continuum, is actually spherical, which you would think that at some point in time it would be. It's interesting because Einstein, I mean, one of the major contributions of Einstein is he says that, hey folks, you know, time is a physical property, and it's not something to be separated from length, width, and height, for example. Mm-hmm. That time is also a physical property. Well, out of that and out of his thinking, I mean, from the time of his special relativity to his general relativity theory, he changed his mind about space. In the special relativity model, he thought space was nothing. But he couldn't justify some of the things that he was thinking about if space was nothing. And so he said, space has got to be something, folks. And so out of that space being something, he came up with the general theory, the general relativity theory. From that, it was a simple matter, well, I mean, relatively simple, to say that, hey, gravity, for example, is nothing more than a distortion in space. So a heavy object or a massive object distorts space a lot more than, you know, a lighter object. And so, you know, the gravity is just this distortion of space. Well, getting back to Higgs boson, for example, is a Higgs boson, instead of actually being a particle, is it just a distortion in space around these subatomic particles?
Well, that gets us back to the article, which and I wanted to ask, because it appears that theoretically they predicted the existence of this Higgs boson, and then they designed an experiment to see if they could find it. They found something, and they said, aha, there it is. When there are other scientists that are saying there could be lots of things, not necessarily Higgs. I mean, it's like wishful thinking is involved here. Again, as science kind of presumes that it's on the right track, it finds something and it says, aha, and then future science comes along and says, no, that wasn't it at all. It's the assumption, the basic assumption that's flawed.
Oh, well, and, you know, these are just guesses. You know, this is a theory, and it's, you know, as we talked about before, it's really just a guess that this particle even exists or that other particles even exist based on your assumption or your belief system about how space is put together and how these particles are put together. Now, a lot of these folks are looking for an explanation for the Big Bang. Believe it or not, I mean, we're talking about very, very tiny things here, but they're trying to look at the what happened in the first, you know, few microseconds or even smaller in the Big Bang, because they're holding on to this theory that, you know, first there was nothing and now there was something.
And I'm not sure entirely how that conflicts with the creation story in the Bible, because to me the Big Bang is the moment when God spoke.
Well, I mean, you can think about that now, you know, when he spoke, he certainly disturbed space, and you know, as we were talking about earlier. So, but in the Big Bang theory, it's like, okay, all of this happened, and then it just went on its own, and we know, for example, from God's word that all of this was entirely directed. Mm-hmm. He directed the whole thing. I mean, not only did he speak, he said, let there be light. But then he did something, amazing. And he said, I'm going to separate the light from the darkness. That sounds like he is doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I think what one of the things that he was doing was making all these subatomic particles by putting a spin on light and spinning these particles, spinning light upon light upon light. Mm-hmm. And, you've got a very intricate, spinning of this light to make up all of these.
So that statement from Genesis would be more than just separating night from day.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have night and day yet. The sun hasn't been created. That was created on the fourth day. Mm-hmm. So something else had to be going on. And, once you separate light from the dark, I mean, you can't explain separating light from darkness. I mean, light, travels in a straight line. Or let me correct that statement. Light travels along space-time lines.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you curve space, light will follow the curvature. And Einstein predicted that, and many years after his death, that was actually proven.
Mm-hmm.
What was happening in the first, several verses in Genesis, I mean, we don't know because we weren't there. Nobody was there. It'll be interesting, to have a conversation, with God face to face with Jesus, because he was the one who spoke it, and say, hey, how did all this come together? I mean, what in the world is matter anyway? And then, he sits down with a chalkboard and starts drawing everything out. And you say, aha, wow, that's fantastic.
I kind of think I'm going to scratch my head and go to the back of the class. Because when you're asking about things you have no experience with, even the nomenclature is foreign to you. How do you ask about the origins of something before there was anything that you would recognize as things? A philosophical question, but
it is a philosophical question, but it's an interesting question because I can, our loving God is not going to leave us pardon the pun, in the dark, but he is going to explain things in such a way that we'll be able to understand.
You can say, well, I'll tell you, it all started with a widget. Yeah, we had
the widget. Here's what the widget looks like, and then I put this widget with that widget, mm-hmm. and then I combine this widget mm-hmm. with that widget, and here's how I combined them, and we're going to say, that makes a whole lot of sense.
I'm with you, Lord. Sure I am. interesting
stuff. It's all interesting because talking about the Higgs boson brings us right back what we were talking about last week with regard to this interface between science and faith. When does science then become faith? Well, you can definitely say here that the particle physicists have faith that the Higgs boson exists,
mm-hmm.
and they first thought that they found it, and now they're thinking, well, maybe it's some of these other particles.
Yeah, a high degree of confidence is so close to faith. I'm not sure how you'd separate the two. And then when you find anything, the inclination is to say, well, that's it. That's what we're looking for. But it turns out there are other possibilities.
Right.
And that's what the article summarized. Yeah, we'll link to the article in our podcast to this conversation on brokenroadradio.com. It'll be up in a couple of hours. And you can read the particle or the article. It's over at upi.com under the Science News heading. And I think you find it interesting. It's a little deep, but there's some links there you can follow up and find out more details if you'd like to. But it makes for an incredible conversation. Don, I think, as usual, we've learned a lot today. David, we have learned a lot, haven't we?
It was deep. Deep. I'm not sure I think it'll be a couple of weeks before I hit the surface.
David, I'll explain it to you later.
Okay, yeah, please do. What are I'm the guy that sat in the back in the biology class, and I think if I didn't demonstrate that I was actually breathing, the instructor would have given me an F.
No.
But he says, "Well, you're fogging a mirror. Okay, I'll let you by this time." Mm. Besides, if I fail you, you'll probably have to repeat the class, and that means you'll be back next semester.
We wouldn't want that, would we?
We don't want that. We do not want that. I've told the story a couple of times just recently. In fact, the that when I went to community college, I was going to be an engineer. I envisioned myself building bridges and that sort of thing. And after about 4 days out of the class, the instructor gave a quiz. And he said, these are things that you've already learned in high school and your previous classes, and then also some of the stuff we covered in the last 4 days. And after the quiz, it wasn't a long quiz because at the end of the period, he met me at the door, pulled me outside, and he says, how do you feel about history? One of the things that, perhaps your strengths don't lie in this particular end of the building. Yeah. You mentioned the Big Bang Theory, and this is all part of the belief system that scientists are trying to prove that this is the way the world came about, that there was some sort of a spontaneous eruption and combination of elements that just blew up. And without knowing or without thinking about it, I saw how deep that belief system goes, and it spreads to other fields of science. And we were watching a program on gold mining last week sometime, I think it was. And the announcer of the program said that the theory, the prevailing theory, is that all of the gold came from outer space. And it came out of somewhere, and it was blasted into the earth in little teeny tiny particles and all over the earth. And three-fourths of it was in water. And that's how gold got here. Now, then he moved on to something else. I mean, it was just, one more example of saying the Big Bang Theory happened and that's how the gold got here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But to make it short and sweet, and then the next thing was, but we also find out that gold is concentrated in probably six or seven different pockets in around the world. If it was exploded equally over time, all over the earth, how'd it get the pockets? It must have moved. It must have said, "Hey, I think." A cousin Gold lives over there in East Lavovia. I think I'll go over and live with him. There just seems to be a belief system in place that wants to buy so badly into this Big Bang Theory that they just kind of close off.
Just think of it logically. There has to be a theory to start with. If you're trying to explain a result that you've observed, and you come up with a theory, and there's not much to go on, sometimes you reach for some pretty wild ideas. And that sounds like, because otherwise you never go anywhere. If you have a theory, at least you can prove it right or wrong.
Right. And, there's nothing wrong with guessing. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially in science, it's absolutely needed. Mm-hmm. I don't understand this, so I'm going to guess that this is the way, the mechanism. So, but all I'm suggesting is we have a resource. We have a history book. Why don't we use it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To guide us in our guesses, and perhaps we might stumble upon the right guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
My impression of this guy with talking about gold and talking about the Higgs boson and all of the rest of the theorists that we hear so much about is that it's almost a sense of panic. I mean, there's got to be some other reason. We can't just rely on this reason. This reason doesn't make any sense. And I just started reading the book that Jim told me about, The Bible Told Me So. And in the first couple chapters, the author talks about we as Christians have been defending the book of the Bible so intently, and all the nasty, evil things that go on in the Bible, and we can't. It's getting tough to defend that sort of thing, so we got to think about something else.
Well, and again, I just to modify that thought, his point is, the rest of the title is it's from defending the Bible that's made us unable to read it.
Right.
In other words, justifying things that are unjustifiable. And so we make up reasons why, this must be this way, this must be the reason it happened, and so forth. And so we tend to cloak the real core meaning of Scripture with all these excuses and all these fabrications, when all you got to do is read it. It's right there in front of you.
Well, it is, and then you know, I think helping to understand the character of God, and when mm-hmm. when you run into something that seems, on the at least the first reading, to contradict his character, then you need to kind of reinterpret that mm-hmm. in light of his character.
Yep, and so, that's what this book does. So, and very effectively, although not everybody would agree with it. But it's a thought-provoking book, and in fact, Don, I'd love to get your take on that too. I think it would ruffle your feathers a little bit, but it's the Bible tells me so. Why defending Scripture has made us unable to read it. Peter Enns, who is a liberal theologist and professor, but he's got some interesting points of view in that book. It's fun to wrestle with, you know, it really is. Dr. Don Clark, member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to recommend that people visit the Creation Moments website. It's creationmoments.com. You find it's a very valuable resource. You had a bookmark it probably. You can go there now and then and actually read some of the legitimate science that speaks to a young earth creationist position. You don't get that out in public very often, and it's there, and it's important that you see it and that you know it and you understand it and you weigh it in the balance when you're deciding about things like creation and the existence of God and so forth. Like, you'll find that Creation Moments is an invaluable resource. And you can link to them from BrokenRoadRadio.com. We'll make that easy for you right on the homepage there. Don joins us about every Tuesday morning. Don, be available next Tuesday?
Yes, there's no reason why I shouldn't be.
Okay.
Okay. We'll see you then.
We'll look forward to it.
Don't expect snowfall or anything.
Nope, not down here unless you guys push it this way. Well, if you're fanning it south, then it may reach us.
We'll see what we can do. Bye-bye.
So long.
See you, Don.